And now it's time for On Our Minds. The 20th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide has been on everyone's mind recently. But rather than looking back, let's look forward. Rwanda today is a very different country than it was 20 years ago. Josh Ruxin has been on the ground for much of that recovery. He moved to Rwanda with his wife Alyssa about a decade after the genocide to do aid work. And they wound up opening a restaurant called Heaven. Now he's written a book about their experience and about the untold story of Rwanda's comeback.
Actually, after the genocide, the sweet and incredible secret was that Rwanda really got on its feet, went through an incredible reconciliation process, and started to experience tremendous economic growth. Just in the past decade, it's been growing probably 2.5-3 times as quickly as the U.S., just to put it in perspective.
At the same time, there still is evidence of the genocides all over the place. When you tell a story in the book about, it was just after you and Alyssa arrived at your new home, and there was a morning when 3 Rwandan women came to your house. Actually, can you tell that story?
Yeah, we had just moved into this beautiful new house, and one morning we woke up and there was a knock at the door, and a few women said that they wanted to sit down and speak with us. And one of the women introduced herself as a survivor of the genocide whose brother had been murdered in the neighborhood, and she knew for a fact that he was buried in our backyard. And she was coming to ask us permission to dig up his bones and provide him with a proper burial.
How did you and Alyssa react when you found out?
We were, of course, shocked by it, but not overly shocked. Back 10 years ago, when there were strong rains, you would still see bones and bodies or the remnants of bodies that would be uncovered in the street. So that wasn't the most shocking bit of it. What really surprised us was that when she came back a few weeks later, they were all happy. In fact, they invited our daughter, who was just a baby then, Maya, out in the yard as they were exhuming and cleaning these bones, because it was a celebration for them. They felt lucky to have known where this family member was buried, unlike so many others, and they were able to lay him into a grave where they could revisit him. So it
I just find that astonishing. How do people arrive at that level of forgiveness, and how are they able to move past the anger?
Living in Rwanda all these years, it's something that we still don't understand. We have friends who miraculously have absolutely forgiven those who killed their family members. And the way they describe it to us, and it's a very similar experience across our friends, is that the hatred weighed so heavily on their hearts that they felt freed when they were able to meet the killers of their parents, of their siblings, and forgive them.
Has that happened in a lot of cases?
It has. It has. It has happened across entire communities in Rwanda. And actually, there actually is a reconciliation village where it's possible to go visit and hear directly from the perpetrators and from the victims' families how they are rebuilding their community and reestablishing kindness and a sense of progress among each other. It's just, there's nothing like it. And I personally don't understand it. I mean, I don't know how they have gotten to that point.
Hmm. You wound up talking shortly after those women came to your house. You know, and this is your new house. Nobody really wants to move in and suddenly discover that people were killed in your house. And you went next door to a neighbor who then kind of, he made the story even bigger. Describe a little bit his memories of what it was like during those days in Rwanda.
Well, Pierre Antonio, who's our next-door neighbor to this day, he was a business person going back generations in the region. He and his family were holed up next door to our home during the genocide, and when there was a break, he actually managed to shuttle his kids and his wife out of the country. And he was concerned not only about his employees who he hadn't been able to save, but also about an orphanage that he was aware of. And loaded up with cash, he went back into Rwanda at the height of the genocide and saved so many lives. And he literally paid for them. And here's a man who's just incredibly modest and does not go out of his way to tell these stories. And he's a Schindler.
Hmm. He said he'd, in several cases, happened upon gangs who were in the process of killing someone, and he would basically ransom the person away.
He had different denominations of notes in his pockets based on how he sized up the gang of killers, because if he showed too much money, he feared for his own life, that they might try to take everything that he had. If he showed too little, then it would be insulting, and he might not be able to save that person's life. So his experience was just incredible, and he is the hero who lives next door. And one of the toughest things that he told us about was that after this body was exhumed, and actually in the course of starting to write my book, A Thousand Hills to Heaven, I noticed that the door frames on all of our doors had been broken at one point and repaired. And I asked Pierre Antonio about it, and he said, yes, regretfully, there were several people who were murdered in your home, and that's why the doors were bashed in.
Because the killers hacked the doors up trying to get in?
Yeah, they had broken down the doors, and there were people who were hiding in our house in the height of the genocide. And there were people who, he had, I think, dozens of people stowed away in his home, but he certainly couldn't save everyone.
And then that sounds like that's the story for your entire neighborhood. I mean, it's not just your home. It's the house across the street and the one, you know, down the block and the one next door.
Yeah, it was a killing field. And it's unimaginable. I can't imagine it.
So tell me about the restaurant that you and your wife opened, the restaurant called Heaven. Aside from being beautiful, the restaurant also represents a new way of thinking about poverty, small scale, rather than the great big massive aid programs. Am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that aid, of course, is important when it's well deployed with governments that actually spend it well and are not corrupt. And Rwanda actually has one of those very few relatively non-corrupt governments. But what then? I mean, what should aid actually be about? And increasingly, I see this incredible opportunity to invest in the private sector, to invest in small and medium-sized enterprises, to create the business engine that we are quite fond of here in the U.S. And I think we have this standard by which we think that somehow poorer countries should want for something different, but they don't. The dreams of these nations are the same, and the dreams of their citizens are the same. One of our dear friends on opening night of Heaven, going 7 years ago now, walked in and he grabbed Alyssa and hugged her and said, our country doesn't need aid anymore. What our country needs is 1,000 heavens. So just 1,000 small businesses like this, each generating dozens of jobs and hundreds of downstream jobs, that'll put the aid cronies out of business. That's what we need.
Josh Ruxin is the author of 1,000 Hills to Heaven, Love, Hope, and a Restaurant in Rwanda.